It's like, oh yeah, what are the book club for Massacre's best picks of 2021? Two science fiction novels from the early 1990s by the same author. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Our finger is on the pulse of popular literature.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For Masochists and Other Deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 140, we are talking about our favorite reads from 2021.
Not necessarily from 2021, in 2021.
I guess so, yes. I don't know. It's very awkward figuring out which preposition to use here.
If you're coming to this podcast and you haven't listened to it before and you're looking for brand new books from 2021.
Nope.
Maybe.
There might be one or two.
There might be a few, but that is not what the majority of what we will be talking about is. Also, if you have never listened to the podcast before, because I know these best of episodes do get more listeners, our next two genres, as we mentioned before, we're going to be doing architecture next month. And then Amish romance.
Ooh.
So if you want to listen to us, I don't sound like someone that would enjoy Amish romance. Going to have to read some and then discuss it on this podcast. So look forward to that.
Yeah. So let's figure out who it is you're going to hear get tortured with Amish romance.
True. Who are we?
It's going to be. That includes me. My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. Las Vegas is located on the traditional homelands of the Nuiti Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute Tribe and the Moapa Band of Paiutes.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian currently, once again, in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
My name is RJ. I'm also a librarian in Vancouver, BC, Canada, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
And my name is Megan. I'm an archivist. I live and work on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is also known as the National Capital Region of Canada.
Matthew, I could have sworn for a moment there you almost said I'm a vampire instead of I'm a librarian. And I think it was actually you stumbling over in Vancouver, but like...
No comment.
It really sounded like you were going to go down saying, I'm a vampire.
I never realized that your Yeti mic is goth, and I really appreciate that.
I do have an all-black Yeti microphone, yes.
Yes, he does.
It might say blue on it, but that is not the color.
Yep.
So announcements, one that I forgot to make last episode, I was on another podcast, another library podcast. I was on an episode of The Secret Stacks, which is a comic book and library podcast. And so it's really just me and the host talking about comic stuff, what comics we've read, comics in the workplace, lots of things like that. If you want to hear me talk more about comics, go and listen to that podcast.
Matthew is getting quite the experience in being on lots of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly sort of kind of wanted to do like a podcast tour and just go and like in 1 month just appear like on a different podcast every week. Mm-hmm. It's like a book tour, but for no reason, I guess, is really what it is.
Posters.
Get t-shirts made.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the next time you put a zine out.
Yeah. I could definitely do that. But I like the idea of doing it for like not even promoting anything.
Yeah.
I guess that's an invitation as well. If you would like me to be on your podcast, on your podcast, if you would like me to be on your podcast and talk about stuff, let me know. I'm willing to talk about things.
Not me, though. I'm busy.
That's concerningly open-ended, Matthew.
I know.
Busy with what, RJ?
I have another podcast. I wasn't planning this announcement, but it is here in the show notes. Since we're talking about our other podcasts, you could listen to my other podcast, Hark. It is the time of year for it. It is a year-round holiday music podcast, but we're here in the thick of winter holiday times, and we have our year-end episode coming up, during which I will be trying to pick the greatest Christmas song of all time, and my partner Ian will be trying to pick the worst. And we'll see how we do. We've done this for several years now, and so we probably... We've already hit some really, really good and really, really bad stuff. But if you want to find out what we come up with this year, that's at harkpodcast.com or jingle.horse.
I love that, like, you say that as though people understand that that's a URL.
Yeah, I have had to parse it for people. It's just .horse.
Yeah, .horse is not a URL that people encounter very often.
Yeah. I definitely did have a friend who heard that it was jingle.horse and said, wait, it's jinglehorse.what? And it's like dot nothing. It's jingle.horse.
That sounds like a who's on.
It does. Uh-huh. The final announcement is that we have put together another of our retroactive book lists of books by authors of color. And we do these, we do one of these lists for every new genre that we cover, but we weren't doing them for the first several years of the podcast. So every episode where we're not covering a genre, we do a retroactive book list. And this time it was philosophy?
It is philosophy, yes. So in the show notes, you'll find 20 philosophy books by Black, Indigenous, and People of Color authors.
And as always, a great, big, huge thank you and commendation to RJ, who heads up our process in doing these and often is the main person for identifying the options for these lists. So thank you, RJ.
No problem.
Okay, so the format for this episode, as I said before, we're not necessarily talking about the best things that came out this year, but what we will be doing is discussing our favorite reads for the podcast. So we have to read things from a different genre every month. And, oh, does anyone have a list of what genres we read this year?
I can pull it up on our website.
Bookclubform.com? Wow, yeah.
Bookclubform.com.
As Anna said earlier, it really needs to be updated.
Oh, yeah, I discovered that list is not actually updated and accurate.
We have most of the genres we read this year. Up until, like, September, so.
I have the spreadsheet.
Oh, that's a much better idea.
Yeah.
Good idea. Thank you.
We started the year with sociology nonfiction. Our romance was Regency romance. Then we went to biology nonfiction. We tried psychological horror, did a little bit of literary fiction, tried crime fiction, read some film, TV, video nonfiction, then went cyberpunk, which was fun. We tried the format of flash fiction. Then we did erotica, and our last nonfiction episode was music nonfiction, and then we had thrillers.
It was literary criticism.
Yeah, not literary fiction. We did that in 2020.
Oh, did I say literary fiction? Because it says literary theory in the list, so that was just complete brain nonsense.
Your brain just doing autocomplete.
So yeah, we alternate between nonfiction and fiction, and we'll each be saying our favorite fiction for the podcast, our favorite nonfiction for the podcast, and then our favorite fiction and nonfiction not for the podcast that we read, and then other stuff, I think, is how this goes.
Yeah.
So without further ado,
mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. That's how that phrase works. You're right.
Let's get on with this.
I think you start, Matthew.
Yeah, I think you start. You're on the list to start.
Okay, yes, it is indeed me that's going first. So my favorite fiction for the podcast was, to probably no one's surprise who knows me or has listened to this podcast, the book I read for the month we covered Cyberpunk. And I realized after we recorded that episode that I just went on about how much I love Cyberpunk without actually saying any Cyberpunk media I'd ever experienced or even really kind of like what Cyberpunk was. So I clearly did a terrible job in that episode. But anyway, I really enjoyed the book I read that month, which was Dreamships by Melissa Scott. It's from 1992. And it had so much of what I love about cyberpunk fiction. So I'm actually going to mention some of it here, which is people trying to survive in horribly corrupt corporate worlds, political movements, artificial intelligences, hacking, and puts it all in space with experimental faster-than-light spaceships and other planets. Plus, there's lots of queer characters in this one, which is a little surprising in some ways for something from 1992. But I saw some reviews that said this one has too much description in it. And I've definitely complained about that sort of thing before in fantasy novels. But for me, if it's about like food or a banquet or like courtiers, I don't care. But if it's about previously cutting edge technology that now seems incredibly obsolete, give me all of the description you can. I really loved the technology described in this that seems so horribly outdated, even though this is set like 1,000 years in the future. Always one of the problems with cyberpunk fiction, I think, and science fiction in general, is how fast the technology can become dated. But this is a really fun book. I enjoyed it a bunch. And I intend to try to read the second book, the sequel to this, next year as part of my 2022 is the year of book twos. More of that next month, I guess.
You two will be hearing more about on this very podcast.
But that's it for me.
All right. That makes it my turn. So favorite fiction from podcast comes from the episode number 123, Psychological Horror, for me. And it is Her Body and Other Parties by Carmen Maria Machado, which is a book of short stories. And the reason I selected this one is because several of these stories have just stuck around in my head, and they keep like kind of nagging at me, and like I keep thinking about them a little bit. And I feel like that is a really, like, I also genuinely enjoyed reading it at the time, but I feel like that's a like really powerful sign of like how a book had an impact on me. I did really enjoy reading these. They're great short stories. They're very much in that realm of psychological horror where it's very kind of atmospheric and is about what's happening and the ways in which it's happening, as opposed to like horrifying things that are literally happening on the page. This is also where one of these stories actually has a moment where a character breaks the fourth wall and talks to the reader and tells them to please stop because it's getting scary. And I was like, uh-oh, I can't keep reading the book now. I feel bad for this character. I can't do it. And I had to like put the book down for like several days before I could go back and be like, okay, look, like silly, be like you're being ridiculous. Go read the book. So I think that was a lot of fun and very interesting. And these were great ideas and really impactful. And I really enjoyed the perspective and history and kind of like, I don't know, culture that was put into these as well. So anyways, that was Her Body and Other Parties by Carmen Maria Machado. However, just to note for the future, and RJ, I will let you kind of bring this one up as like, you and I can go over this when we get after your one, but just a hint for the future, there's going to be an addendum to this.
So my pick is also from the Cyberpunk episode, and it is also by Melissa Scott, and we did not discuss this beforehand, so I probably would have guessed if I'd thought about it for 2 seconds, but I read Trouble and Her Friends, which is published in 1994, and I never would have picked it up if we hadn't revisited Cyberpunk as a genre, but I really loved all the parts of this, like all the retro cyberpunk vibes and dystopia, the queer outsider found family roles, and it had like a great driving pace to it, which I like in my reads. And so we talk more about this in the episode, but basically our protagonist has left the shadows of cyberspace when a new law comes into force. But then another hacker, like 10 years down the line or something like that, another hacker shows up and is making trouble under her name. So she's drawn back into the electronic frontier. So I feel like this really should be on the list of cyberpunk classics with like Snow Crash and Neuromancer and stuff like that. And it's really like a missed gem that if you do like cyberpunk, go back and read this one. It's great.
Megan, I cannot believe you had another book by the same author from like the same time period. It's like, oh yeah, what are the book club for Massacre's best picks of 2021? Two science fiction novels from the early 1990s by the same author. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Our finger is on the pulse of popular literature. It's me now, eh?
Yep.
So the book that I decided to make my pick for favorite fiction that we read for the podcast this year was The Devotion of Suspect X by Keigo Higashino. Keigo Higashino, perhaps? I'm too used to pronouncing things in German. Translated by Alexander O. Smith, which I read for our crime fiction episode. I think whenever we do like a mystery or thriller, you know, related genre, I always want to read something that like feels like very like a perfect example of the genre, which is never how it works out, because that usually does not exist. But I feel like this one was a pretty good representation in that it is this sort of both like a sort of classic setup of this like detective who has this, you know, genius friend, and then they're going head to head with this other like intellectual giant, and you know, carefully moving these chess pieces and trying to stay one step ahead of each other and figure each other out. But also did not do like a lot of the things in crime fiction that I don't want to read, where there was not, you know, sexual violence or the female characters like felt very like whole and human. And, I think the only real bad guy in the story was the abusive husband who gets killed in the first chapter or first few chapters. And so it was both this sort of classic setup, but also, the author created this cast of characters that I cared about all of them. Even the ones that like had a hand in the murder, which I really enjoyed and I still think about a lot. And I think, as I said in the episode, would love to read something else by Keigo Higashino, this author. I will say, so here's the addendum that Anna mentioned.
Yep.
I really did love The Devotion of Suspect X. I think really the best book that I read for the podcast this year was Piranesi by Susanna Clarke.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
But I didn't pick it because I had this feeling that that's all of our favorites. Like, we can't all pick Piranesi.
I didn't pick Piranesi because it wasn't one we read for a genre.
Yes. So to explain to people who might actually not know how we do things, because this is an episode and we get a lot of listeners who aren't familiar with our podcast, but usually we all just read from a genre, but it can be any book in that genre. So we don't end up reading the same thing. But once each year, we each propose one book that we will all four read at the same time. And then the listeners get to vote on which of those four books we read. And the selection this year was Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. So it doesn't count as one of our genres, technically.
But yeah, we did an entire episode about one book.
Yeah.
Yes.
About one book. So we did technically read it for the podcast. So like, I cannot include it technically in either of these in a way, depending on how we define them.
I totally picked Pet, our one book that we read together last year for my best fiction of the year. So
yeah, if you do that every year, RJ, that's cheating.
Right. A few issues. One, I didn't want to do that again 2 years in a row. Two, I felt like it was all our favorites and we all couldn't pick it. And three, I felt like if I picked it, since we all can't pick it, then I would be ruling it out for somebody else who might want to pick it. But none of us went that direction. I think we all just have an asterisk next to our pick that says, like, but also Piranesi.
Which is about a book about, like, a spooky house and memory loss and spoilers. Things.
It's hard to give an elevator pitch of what it's about without spoiling it. But yes, it is, statues. It is about a very endearing character who lives a strange life in a very big, spooky, fantastical house, with, you know, infinite seeming, rooms and corridors, and figuring out what's actually going on with this big, weird house and how it exists and how this person got here.
It's very well written and relatively new. I think it was 2020.
Yeah, 2020.
Yeah. And not very long. Also a plus for some people.
Check it out if you haven't. The other thing is that, like, I'm pretty sure it's a bestseller. I don't think Susanna Clarke
needs
the promotion from us.
Next up is favorite fiction not for the podcast.
Yeah, so I get to go first. And my selection actually comes from another episode that we did last year, except we didn't read it for the podcast. But what we did last year is, I think it was in November, we each asked each other for recommendations based on something that we would like to read. So we would like to read, say, a certain type of fiction or nonfiction book, and then we got recommendations. And one of the recommendations I got is the book that ends up being my favorite fiction for the year. And I meant to go check this, but I think it was Megan that did this one.
I don't think so.
I can't remember. Maybe it was RJ. I don't remember. I'm really sorry. I just remember that this was a recommendation I got from somebody. So the book is called Minimum Wage Magic by Rachel Aaron. And it is just a delightful bit of urban fantasy, just like like one of those delightful, fast read, but like so much fun, really satisfying sort of thing that I like to do. I read a lot of nonfiction, so this is the really nice in-between pieces that I get to do once in a while that are just fun and fast. So Minimum Wage Magic is set in a version of Earth in the future where magic has returned and taken over, very definitely. And in the city of Detroit, which is now known as DFZ, I believe it's Detroit Free Zone. I can't quite remember, actually. And in this Detroit, it has basically become a sentient entity, and Detroit is sort of alive as a kind of form of God and is doing interesting things. And this is, you know, it's like basically remaking the city at all times in whatever version it wants itself to be in. And the people just live there. And one of the people living there is a young woman who has a degree in, I think it was magical art history. And with that degree, she's making a living as a cleaner who goes into like apartments and housing when people have abandoned them and aren't paying their rent and stuff anymore. And she cleans them out and preps them so that they can be resold. So she's basically a contractor who does this. But the reason that she has her magical art degree helps is because A, she can figure out what's valuable in the spaces, and B, she knows how to avoid the dangerous magic that are in a lot of homes. And in one particular cleaning event. she stumbles across a dead body. And there's a whole mystery here about like, boy, it seems really weird that they're even here in the first place. And who is this person? And wow, they seem like an odd situation. And there's some strange stuff in this room. And it's just sets up a whole series of events that gets her involved with other weird cleaners who are like, maybe not what they seem like they are, and she's not like what she seems like she is, and it's just a whole lot of fun from there. So there's like gods and alternate dimensions and dragons and the whole shebang going on in here, and it was just a lot of candy fun to read.
So I had quite a few books in the running for this one because there was just a lot more selection, and you can find those in the runner-up section of the show notes.
Megan, how many books did you read this year?
I don't know what my current number is. I'm going to guess like 230.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so the one I picked to talk about today is called Winter Tide by Ruth Anna Emrys. It was published in 2017, and it's the first of a series that has two books in it. And our main character is a woman who came from Innismith. So this is one of those Lovecraft revisitings that I love, 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 love. And for this one, the U.S. government rounded up all the people of Innismith and took them to the desert with all the Japanese Americans that they'd interned. And basically, most of them died. So Afra, our main character, and her brother survived. And they're pretty traumatized by all of this. But Afra has been contacted by an FBI agent, and he believes that communist spies have stolen dangerous magical secrets from the Miskatonic University. And, you know, she's not super happy to be helping the U.S. government, who she hates and did terrible things to her family. But she's also really drawn to the idea of finding out, getting access to the books that they took from Innismith when they attacked there. So his story ends up being like almost plucky band of outsiders join forces to save the world from terrible magic and terrible people. And it's got, you know, all those fun Lovecraftian things, only not with the terrible stuff that some of the original Lovecraft things has in it. The only criticism I might have is that it's got the bones of a longer running series, but nobody has paid the author to write more. And I'm kind of mad about that.
Okay, are we moving on to the nonfiction zone now?
No.
No, me and Matthew didn't say our picks.
Sorry. It's not looking at the notes at that moment.
I always want to give a little pause in case I don't want to jump in and be like, now my thing, if the person before me is not actually done.
Yeah, fair.
See, I'm happy to do that.
I know.
Takes all kinds. So my best fiction for not the podcast, I had the opposite problem as Megan, where I did not read a lot of things this year. That's not entirely true. I read a lot of picture books. Check out my runners up for a lot of great picture book recommendations. But the fiction, as far as like prose novels for adults that I read this year, I guess this isn't even a novel. It's kind of a novella. To Be Taught If Fortunate by Becky Chambers, which I did talk about in one of our media update episodes, where we just talk about other things we've been reading and consuming outside of the podcast. And I was really sort of hard-pressed this year to find things to talk about in this year-end episode that I hadn't already talked about in the media update episodes, because I kind of covered everything that I consumed this year. I think actually my nonfiction for Not the Podcast, I've also talked about in one of the media update episodes, but To Be Taught If Fortunate by Becky Chambers, a short novel, possibly a novella, about
motorbikes.
About motorbikes. No.
About motorbikes. Even I can tell that.
About a team of scientists doing a tour of several planets in space, and my memories of it were more fresh in the media update episode, so you can go listen to me talk about it there. But I think not only does it sort of encapsulate what I really love about Becky Chambers' sci-fi worlds, which is this like ethic of care and humanism, but like beyond humanism, like respect for all forms of life. I think that is such a through line in To Be Taught If Fortunate, and it also just was so impactful to read for like pandemic feelings reasons, which you may or may not want right now. But if that is something you're interested in, there were times reading that book where I like flipped to the copyright page to make sure it was actually written and published before 2020. It was from 2019. But I was like, this has to be like an allegory for what is happening now. Nope. This was written in 2019.
I also read that book this year, and it was on my short list for best of as well. I also think it was one that was recommended to me.
Yes, I recommended it to you.
You recommended it to me without reading it.
Mm-hmm. And then we both read it. I don't read a lot of things.
No, so. It's fine. I read everything I recommended. I hadn't read either. Great. And I had specifically asked for recommendations, and so it was good. Yes, good job, RJ.
Yay.
My fiction for a thing that I had not read for the podcast was I finally, after, you know, like a year and a half, got around to reading Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir, which came out in 2019 originally. It takes a fantasy story with, you know, ancient noble houses and necromancers and royalty and magic and that sort of thing that I don't really like that much, and then puts it in space, which means that I like it. Gideon and Harrow are summoned by the Emperor, along with representatives from other houses, ancient houses, to participate in what amounts to a weird, deadly puzzle box escape room-like ancient castle ruin on a decaying planet. Which I loved. I loved the atmosphere of this book. Ancient, decaying space castle. I am there for it. So Gideon, as a character, is someone who would probably be... I think I would find them really annoying if they were male. But because they're a woman, it makes a lot of their actions and thought like more non-traditional and kind of like gender non-conforming, which I found a lot more appealing and interesting. I was super excited to read the sequel to this originally, but I tried reading it and I bounced off it immediately. My pandemic brain could not deal with the way the sequel was written, but I'm hoping that next year, 2022, year of the sequel.
Year of book two.
Year of book two. I'm going to try again.
So now we transition into nonfiction. And so for my nonfiction from the books that we read for podcast this year, I picked The Secret Life of Groceries by Benjamin Lohr from the Sociology nonfiction episode. It's a 2020 publication, and I would describe this as delightful and weird and a little bit awful. So I learned a ton about the history of like grocery stores and corner stores and food business, and also modern slavery. So that's a terrible thing that still happens. And there's aside from the learning bits, which I also always love from nonfiction, there's these like chewy, visceral descriptions throughout the book that just like made my brain tingle.
My pick for best nonfiction read for the podcast was The Language of the Night, Essays on Fantasy and Science Fiction by Ursula K. Le Guin. This was from our Literary Theory and Literary Criticism episode. I'm going to be totally honest. I don't fully remember any of the essays from this book, but I just remember the feeling having finished it of like, ah, oh, I feel so good about writing and literature.
Yeah.
I love Ursula K. Le Guin. I'm looking forward to reading her more. I will probably read this book again. It is one that, like, when I finished it, I wanted to buy my own copy. I can remember bits and pieces. I mean, I appreciate always that she is so outspokenly a, like, anti-capitalist sci-fi and fantasy writer, and, you know, was so in 1979 when this book was first published. I also really appreciated that this book, it wasn't the 1979 edition, actually. I think I read...
Oh, you read an updated version with, like, annotations. Version
where she had annotated some of her essays, yeah, which I think was so valuable and such such a smart thing to do as a writer. And like, I mean, such a, I don't want to say brave, that's not the right word, but like, I guess bold thing to do to be able to like go back to your old work and be like, yeah, no, I was wrong about this. And I'm going to publish an updated edition, you know, and not like just remove that essay. I'm going to write notes about why I got, you know, things I got wrong.
Or not even just update the essay, but include the original version and then commentary on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for me, my favorite is one of these words that's always kind of hard, I think, sometimes. The best nonfiction I read for the podcast was Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City by Matthew Desmond, which I read way back, I think in the first episode of 2021 for the sociology nonfiction episode. This is a book that follows people struggling to survive in Milwaukee, Wisconsin during the financial crisis of the late 2000s, which, by the way, is there a better way of saying 2000 to 2010? Do we just call it the 2000s? Mm-hmm. What is that decade called?
The aughts, I have heard.
The aughts, okay.
Yes, that's fine. Do it.
The late aughts. This book is, no joking, like devastating to read. I don't think I really understood what housing insecurity really meant, or the constant struggle to find housing that many people go through, and why affordable housing is so important. Or even, like, for that matter, what affordable really even means when it comes to affordable housing. Because affordable housing for me as an individual is very different than affordable housing for a family or someone with children. So, yeah. So it's really great. It's really depressing, which is why I hesitate to call it my favorite, because I don't know. But there was also a really great chapter at the end of this book about how the research was done and the research process that the author went through to write this book that I thought was really good. Also, this was... like, I was really shocked that there were multiple nonfiction books that I really enjoyed this year that I read for the podcast. Not usually the case, but this year I hit some really great ones. So that was nice.
Good job this year, guys.
Yes, we picked the right random genres this year, apparently.
Apparently. Okay, so my pick is also from the sociology nonfiction episode. That was a very productive episode for us. And actually it seriously was, because I actually messaged Matthew at one point or another, was like, I have a problem. Our notes don't specify which of us read which book for sociology nonfiction. I've read 5 of them on there from our things we read. And I don't know which one was the one that I actually read for that episode, as to which ones I had read before or after that episode.
And this sounds like a Megan problem.
I know. It was one of those moments that's more of a Megan problem, but I was having that moment. So I finally figured out which ones I read. From there, I am picking All the Rage, Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership from Darcy Lockman. And I am picking this despite the fact that I, A, do not have kids, and B, will never have kids, and have no interest in having kids. And yet, this is just like my nonfiction, or my, just like my fiction pick. This book sticks with me. I keep thinking about things from it. It keeps like impacting stuff that I am interested in looking into and hearing about. And I think it has a big impact right now because it's hard to miss the stories that are out there right now about how the pandemic has had an not equal impact on women and men, particularly when children are involved in a relationship. And so this book is definitely, it's got a lot of good quality information and research, and it's very well put together. It's very well written, but it also has a perspective and is making a very definite argument about what it is about our culture and our society and the choices we have made as a culture and society that are causing an imbalance between the effort within the household that mothers and fathers are putting into the equation of raising children, or of having an equal partnership and taking care of just the household efforts of like what has to get done, and how we value different types of labor within our lives. And it was just a super valuable, super interesting read that really like came to it with a very with the receipts and a very solid set of receipts, that was very interesting to read. And I think that was a lot of a theme of my reading this year, was just things that really came with something for my brain to chew on. And even whether I agreed or not, whether I saw issues with some of it or not, it was just a lot of good stuff with really good things for my brain to chew on. And this was way up there with something that really gave my brain some good stuff to chew on. And I enjoyed the reading experience a lot. So that's All the Rage, Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership by Darcy Lockman from 2019. Actually, so fairly recent.
All right, so now we are moving into nonfiction that we read not for the podcast. And I think I'm up first. And as I mentioned, the nonfiction that I read is very much something that I mentioned in a media update episode, because I did not read that much nonfiction this year. And it is Napkin by Carta Monier, which, if you heard that episode, you may remember is a zine. It is explicit. It is for adult readers. Do not mix it up with my picture book recommendations. I feel like the only thing I talk about on this show is, like, the things that I read in my spare time not for this podcast are picture books and books about sex. Just the two, my two specialty areas. So Napkin by Carta Monier is a zine. I bought the digital edition, which is available on Itch, for name your own price. It is, I think, between 100 and 200 pages. A lot of it is photographs.
That's a long zine.
It's a long zine.
I don't know.
I could be wrong about that. It could be just under 100, but it is, you know, it is a zine, that, debuted at, Comics Arts LA in 2019. But is now available online. But I just wanted to mention it in case people go and seek it out, that it is a like sizable amount of content you are getting, if you should decide to purchase it. So factor that into how much you decide to make your price. The sort of core concept is that, Carta Monier offered her sexual partners, comment cards throughout the year of 2019, you know, comment cards. So like, thank you for having sex with Carta. Please take a moment to let us know about your experience. Was this your first time having sex with Carta? Is Carta the first trans woman you've had sex with? Did you have an orgasm? And et cetera. And in between those cards, and, you know, she obviously let people know that she was going to, you know, use them for a zine. In between those cards are photographs and also essays and like personal stories about relationships and sexuality. And obviously it's like cute and funny and fun and sexy, but also there's just some really great writing about relationships and sex. And I highly recommend for like other trans and queer people looking for good writing about sex that feels applicable to your life, to check it out.
My best nonfiction was one I tried to read for the podcast, but it didn't show up in time.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the best nonfiction I read not for the podcast. Oh my gosh, these categories. was 19 Ways of Looking at Wang Wei by Elliot Weinberger. originally published in 1987, and then I read an updated version from 2016. And this is a very brief, slim book that looks at how different people have translated one short four-line nature poem by Wang Wei from 8th century classical Chinese into other languages, mostly English. And it's a great look at both what translation is, what poetry is, and how culture affects both of those things. The author's use of poetic language to critique poetry is really impressive, I found. And this is one of the few books where I truly felt as though every word was carefully selected. Which, when it's a book of literary criticism, really, that's kind of like a wild thing to think about. It also includes stories about a furious professor that I thought were very funny. More references than you will ever catch, and a lot more. The most recent edition that I said I read has several additional translations. So it's beyond just 19 ways. I think it's called subtitled like Now with More Ways. It's worth reading, I think, even if you don't usually read poetry. I'm not someone that reads a lot of poetry, but I really enjoyed this. Also, I read this because I heard about it in a video on YouTube about video games. And so kind of a wild thing. And also this is a book that I thought I might want to reread in the future, which is really wild. Strange considering I never reread books. I think maybe the length of it has something to do with that.
Okay, for mine, I have a slightly guilty feeling about this because my favorite nonfiction book for 2020.
2021.
No, she meant 2020.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My favorite book for 2020 was by the author Eula Biss, but genuinely, my favorite nonfiction book I read for 2021 is also by Eula Biss. So I'm going to do a double one here just because I'm like, it doesn't seem right to give the same author 2 years in a row. But if I'm being truly honest, my favorite nonfiction read for 2021 was Having and Being Had, by Eula Biss. Last year I read Immunization I'm forgetting the exact title for the book. But on immunization or something like that. But, what Eula Biss does is she writes in super short essays that are just anywhere from 1 to 3 pages. And they all fit together and they sort of create a narrative over the course of it. And she explores both concepts and topics and ideas, and connects them to a lot of like really interesting and rich materials throughout our cultural spaces. But she does so through her own very personal lens of her life and her experience. And she unpacks a lot of things through this. So this is one of those books where I both really genuinely, this book was great for me and I really loved reading it, but I also feel a little bit like, very educated middle-class white woman loving this book. Because I think that is the audience to a degree for this book. Because Eula Biss is an educated academic writer who gets, you know, paid to teach people how to, she's a creative fellow or something like that at Northwestern University.
Artist in residence.
Artist in residence. Thank you. Yes, that's what she is. And so to me, what this is that she's a similar match to where I am in my life. And that's a lot of what speaks to me. But also, she's just a really good writer. I mean, just really good at it. And I love the way that she puts these together. And it gives me so much to chew on. She's very reflective. And she sits in discomfort. And she's acknowledges those things that she's like, this is not a good thing. But it is what's reality is. I acknowledge that this is what I do. This is how I live my life. And I am aware of the contradictions and the problems here and the spaces in which my privilege takes over in this. So Having and Being Had is on capitalism and our relationship to capitalism. And she explores it through the lens of buying her first home. And On Immunity was, of course, on immunizations. And she explores it through the lens of deciding to immunize her children. Or not, right? Like exploring that issue. So, you know, take that for what it is. So my other option then, given that I'm like the same author 2 years in a row, but like, okay.
And I literally gave the same book my award 2 years in a row when we did this book one.
Did you really? I did not remember that. What book was it?
In the first 2 years, the first year I gave my favorite fiction for the podcast, an excerpt from Red Spider White Web by Misha.
Oh, yeah.
That I read in an anthology. And then the next year, I read the full book, and that was my favorite book that I read that year.
I did not remember that. That is really funny.
Also, to note, an old cyberpunk novel, I am clearly very me.
Yeah, Matthew is Matthew, is what you're saying. Well, Anna is Anna, and she's going to cheat and try to get away with it. So my other pick is Lower Ed, The Troubling Rise of For-Profit Colleges in the New Economy by Tressie McMillan Cotton from 2020, which is just a shockingly readable and really well put together exploration of how higher education works these days. And while yes, it is definitely picking apart the for-profit aspect of it, I mean, it really, if you are in any way involved in academia and you haven't read this yet, you really ought to. But also just like, what amazes me is what a great job she does at making this so approachable and readable. And she pulls in a lot of real stories of real people, and she shows her relationship to the situation. She includes her stories of why she relates to this and her perspective on it, while also, you know, again, providing the receipts and giving you just a lot to chew on about where the higher education situation is right now and how the for-profit colleges really unpack a lot of what's going on in higher education at the moment. By looking at them, you look at a lot of other issues in higher education. So anyways, that's my other nonfiction pick for the year. That's my cheat with my reasoning why.
You know, I always know that you're going to cheat, and I always think, well, if Anna's going to cheat, I should probably cheat too. And then I forget to structure it in such a way that I could fit in like three or six more, because I'm like, oh, but those goes in the runner-up. I should be more strategic.
Megan, your cheating is its own spin-off podcast. We've discussed this before. You've read too many books.
No such thing.
You've read too many books to discuss in a podcast of this length.
Anyway, so the book that I picked for nonfiction, not read for this podcast, but read this year, is called Three Squares, The Invention of the American Meal by Abigail Carroll. This was published in 2013, and it goes through the evolution of meals in the United States from about where it's founding up to now. And frankly, what I liked about this book is that it supports my meal anarchy tendencies. Because I believe, cereal for breakfast, nonsense. Eat whatever you want for breakfast. Eat breakfast for your snack if you want to. Deciding you could only have, spaghetti for dinner is nonsense. And looking at how meals were eaten in the United States from when, lunch used to be the biggest meal of the day and you just had a little something at dinner and that was it. But we've changed because of industrialization, because of different trends around how we ate, what dinners were like, that whole complicated thing about, 17 spoons and 6 knives and that kind of nonsense. trend. Clearly, we don't need to eat out of bowls with your single spoon in the middle of your home anymore, hopefully. But you can eat the food that you want to eat when you want to eat it, basically. Sorry, I ranted. But it was an interesting book.
Megan, I feel that for many people, the reason we eat breakfast food for breakfast is because we're too sleepy to cook anything in the morning.
But the thing is, if you've got leftovers from last night, you could just eat that. That's even less thinking.
That's true. I mean, I do eat cereal any time of day.
I don't like cereal, so I actually kind of weirdly struggle to figure out what I am going to bother to eat in the morning. Also because I, as a single person, sometimes I have good leftovers, but sometimes I
Wait, what did you just say?
I did hear. As an individual.
As a single liver.
Yes.
I'm sorry, living alone. I said that all wrong.
Really, really brutal way to break up with someone in the middle of a podcast recording.
No. I'm really sorry.
I recommend rice. Rice is nice. You can put random things on it. Eggs, if you like eggs.
That's how I survived, with rice with random things on it. That is, like, pretty much what I do.
Okay. Good job, all of us. I don't think any of the books we talked about were from 2021. Almost half of them were from 2019 or 2020. So, vaguely up to date, at the very least.
Yeah. It's pretty good for us, honestly.
It kind of is, yeah.
Good job, team.
All right. Last round of things, which is the other favorite things of 2021 that are not books.
I think one of us may have misunderstood that, Anna.
You're allowed to do books, I think.
It's just other. You're allowed to do others. So, for listeners, periodically we do just general episodes. If you aren't a person who listens all the time to us, we do general episodes periodically where we just talk about things that we are taking in, not for the podcast, that are like, you know, just other types of media and stuff. So this is sort of reflective of that, is we're going to talk about a few of the other things. And it turns out I'm first again. So my picks for this are two podcasts, Maintenance Phase and You're Wrong About. And I know that these do not need any, like, hyping for the most part. Like, these are have quite taken off over the pandemic life. And even before that, You're Wrong About was getting some good, solid traction, but it really took off with the pandemic. But Maintenance Phase is about re-examining our relationship to understanding health and wellness, and particularly how we relate to fat people and how we, you know, think about and study and talk about fatness in our modern North American culture. And then You're Wrong About is a kind of nostalgia look back at the 90s, 80s, and 2000s, aughts, from that era, and like key events from that time frame, and just like unpacks what was actually happening in them and ways in which we might not have really understood the message of, or the actual, like, what was happening, or like the media presented it in weird ways or stuff like that. The reason I'm picking these is because these were my anxiety brain has taken over and I cannot sleep podcasts. This was how I fell asleep many, many nights this year, and how I got through a lot of things was just by listening to these. There's also, there's a lot of overlap in these. So like, one of the hosts, Michael Hobbs, is hosts on both of these podcasts, and then they have a co-host. So Aubrey Gordon is a co-host for Maintenance Phase, and Sarah Marshall is the co-host for You're Wrong About. Sarah Marshall also has another podcast that she does with another co-host, Alex something or another. Sorry, I clearly did not prep for this part. That is about examining, well, it started off being called What Are Dads, but it's now called You Are Good. And it started off from the perspective of examining movies and how dads are presented in them, and how it, you know, kind of using that to unpack our cultural understanding of dads. And I just, the only reason I didn't include that one, because I also do listen to that one, but not as often, because I'm just not as into the movie stuff as I am into these other ones. So just the basic topic isn't as cool for me, but like, generally speaking, I like the structure and the podcaster hosts and their formats, and their thought process and stuff is really good. And I just find these wonderful ways to both learn a little something and feel connected to what's going on in our culture, and also just like let my anxiety brain think about something else for a little bit and like calm down and maybe fall asleep.
Two things, Anna. One, you played me part of an episode of You're Wrong About.
Mm-hmm.
About the Satanic Panic.
Oh, yes, I did.
Which was like, what is going on? Very much so.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was a great section. Shoot, what was that section? It was a good one.
Anyway, I downloaded the rest of the episodes to listen to that section to get the full context for that, but I haven't listened to them yet. Also, I really thought you were going to be talking about Animal Crossing New Horizons.
Okay, I just started playing. I just got a Switch it for like at Thanksgiving, and I just started playing, and like, yes, I am playing it a ton right now, but like, look, that's like the last 6 weeks of the year, not even 6 weeks of the year. Like, I haven't even had it a month now. I cannot use that. Like, the thing that has survived, has made my survival happen through this year are these podcasts, not Animal Crossing.
Speaking of Switches and games.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking about a game. I picked for this other category something I have not talked about on a media update episode. Woohoo! It is a game called Unpacking, which is a Zen puzzle game. This is one that I played on the one bit of travel that I did this year. I went and saw some friends that I had not seen since 2019, and one of our activities that we did together was that we played Unpacking, which is a video game that is not intended to be multiplayer, but we just sort of passed the controller back and forth and took turns. It is a game about unpacking. It's a game about moving into new places and unpacking this protagonist, this unseen protagonist's stuff. And so it was really easy to like pass the controller between three people and you know, just do a box each for each round of play. And through unpacking, you get to learn more about this character, who she is, and you also see her grow. Like, the first room that you unpack is, like, her first, like, her own bedroom in her parents' house when she's a kid. Like, she's 12 years old, presumably-ish. I don't know if it actually specifies her age, but it gives you the year, and you can tell it's a kid's bedroom. And then it shows, you know, her... her first college dorm room. Though I think, I don't know, I will say that was the one level where we're like, this is a really, really nice dorm room. then like her first time living with roommates, and in the roommates level, you can't, rearrange any of the roommates stuff. Oh. Like that stuff's not clickable. And then moving in with a partner for the first time and their stuff is movable. And it just like, there's a bunch of clever mechanics like that. Like certain objects will interact with each other. Like if you have, there's like toothbrushes and you can put them into mugs to hold onto them instead of putting them just like flat on the counter. There's just like a ton of like clever, thoughtful details like that. Like there's so much like little attention to detail things. And also it's just so fun to look at these objects and, you know, kind of spy on this person's life and, learn about them. And there's things like that you start putting together pieces where you see like themes coming up in the things that they own and be like, oh, this must be from where they work. Like, oh, this shirt is like their work uniform because they also have this matching hat that has this logo on it. Or like, when you are moving in with the roommates, there are a bunch of, books that look very much like, tabletop role-playing game books. And then you also start unpacking like dice and minis and and being like, oh, there's other role-playing stuff already in this apartment. This must be their like D&D group that they're moving in with. all sorts of stuff like that. It's super fun. I will also say it was fun to do as a group because I got to like find out my friend's strategies towards this kind of thing, where I always wanted to do the unpacking that was more like decorating. And my friends, E always wanted to do the bathrooms first. He wanted to prioritize bathrooms. And then, my friend Emma, wanted to do the closets, which I was very glad about because I did not want to do closets, but I think she was very zeroed in on like the sort of puzzly organizing of that. That was more fun for her. It's a really cute game. I liked it a lot. It was fun to do with friends, and I was just like looking at their website. It's also, like very, you know, they mentioned very prominently on their website that it is like intentionally a very accessible game. They list like the options that they have for mobility, vision, hearing, and cognitive accessibility.
I'm so happy that more games are doing that sort of thing and that more people are like acknowledging that like there isn't a right way to play video games.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this game is a great example of like what a really accessible game looks like. There's not like a time limit or a score.
I will say, I watched a video of some people trying to speedrun it, which was hilarious.
There's very little text in the game. You don't have to be able to read to play it. Yeah, it's check it out. Unpacking is the game.
It looks really cute and fun from what I've seen of it. And like I was watching some playthroughs online and I had to stop.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I want to play this for myself. I don't want to spoil where the best placement for the teddy bear is or whatever it happens to be.
Absolutely. Yeah.
My other thing, I have two. One is very Vancouver specific in some ways, though you can enjoy it too, but from a distance by looking at pictures on the internet, which is Barge Chilling Park. Recently in Vancouver, there was a big storm and a big barge washed up on shore on a beach near where Anne and I used to live many years ago. And it is now a tourist destination. On Google Maps, it was called Barge Chilling Park. And then the city actually put a sign up. I think the sign says Barge Chilling Beach, which is just honestly just great. And I love that they made the sign. It makes me so happy. I was talking to someone and they're like, Vancouver is like kind of traditionally known as no fun city. I'm like, oh no, look, occasionally fun things can happen here. Everybody loves the barge. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants the barge to go away.
Yes. They were talking about removing the barge and everyone's like, no, let us have the barge.
They keep threatening to remove it and it's still there.
Background on the Chilling Park construction.
Oh, right. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Is that like several years ago, I think shortly after I moved to Vancouver, there is a statue in one of our parks that looks kind of abstract, but looks mostly like a person like reclining. It's like a blocky shape, but it looks like a person like reclining with like one knee up, like just chilling. And somebody put up a fake sign that said Do Chilling Park. And then that sign, like it went through, I think, a series of like removals and reinstatements and like vandalism. And then I think eventually an official park sign is now up that says Do Chilling Park.
The other thing is a comic that I read, and for a full list of my comics, please go to the show notes because there's too many for me to talk about in one episode. But The Magic Fist by Trung Le Nguyen, which was from the end of 2020. It's a comic about the immigrant experience, being queer, communication, language and cultural barriers, and more. The artwork is gorgeous, and it's obvious a lot of thought and effort was put into things like the hair and clothes, which I really appreciated. Also, the use of color to separate different threads of the story is amazingly well done. It's great to see the color used in this way. I thought it was really interesting. It's marketed as a kind of kids or young adult comic, but I think it's a title that will easily appeal to adults as well. So just because if it's shelved in the YA or kids section, don't let that turn you off checking it out. And the mix of like kind of fairy tale retellings from different cultures and more realistic events created a story that made me really happy that comics exist as a medium at all. And I really look forward to seeing what the author does in the future. I hope a horror comic. Very unlike what this one was, but I really want to see what they would do with the horror comic.
I think the art they could do for a horror comic would be incredible. Yeah.
So good. Just do more fairy tales and make them creepier.
Yeah.
So I think last year for this episode, I said something like, go outside and be in nature. And to be honest, that's kind of still part of what's gotten me through 2021 as it continues. And one of the things, I can't remember whether I talked about this on the podcast before, probably, is that part of the way I was getting outside was I decided to make a map of all the libraries in the National Capital Region. And so I plotted them out on a Google Maps, and then I started taking pictures of some of them. And then I was like, well, you know, little free libraries, book exchanges, whatever. There's a map for the official registered little free libraries, but there's way more of them than those. So I started putting all the book exchanges all around the Gatineau side, at least, because really there's so many. There's so many. And I discovered this website called, it's wander.earth, but there's an E missing in, no, it's wanderer.earth, and their first E is missing. So autocorrect tries to correct it all the time. But anyway, so it allows you to track where you walked or biked in an area and you get points for how much of the travelable roads that you would be allowed to travel in an area. And so I have completed like almost 80% of the area that I live in. And on the one hand, this is actually really helpful for making sure I haven't skipped any small like neighborhood areas, because I live on like between that sort of border of urban suburban, so they get those weird cul-de-sac and nonsense roads. Like, it's not a grid. It's pretty easy to get lost in. And so it really helps me make sure that I've gotten all of the roads, made sure I probably have seen all of the book exchanges. Although sometimes it's really dark and I miss stuff. So I go over it once on bike and then once on foot. So I'll put that in the show notes. I didn't think of it until now. And the other thing, which is a book, is called Sacré d'Epinard, and it's my French book pick. It's by Judith Lussier, 2010, and it's like a photo book of the ever-present Quebec d'Epinard. And a d'Epinard is like a corner store, basically. It's the little spot that's got your smokes, your beer, your liter of milk, and your, you know, 2 liters of Pepsi or whatever.
And your Quebecois-specific things.
Sure. And so I lived 8 years in Montreal, and looking through this book, I'd be like, I have seen exactly that d'Epinard, but you don't really know because they really have like a look to them. And what was great about this book is, yes, it's got all the photos of the d'Epinard and you've got some nice nostalgia-y stuff, whatever, but it also goes through the history of the d'Epinard and why the d'Epinard as opposed to the grocery store in certain places. So that was really fun.
I still remember years ago being in Montreal. I think it was during like a liquor store strike, and the newspapers and the free weeklies and stuff all had guides on the best wine to buy at the Depps. Because it's like, we know you're going to be buying wine anyway. Here's what you can. Here's the best wine you can buy at the Depanneur, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing wrong.
Here's your best $10 option.
Pretty much. I think that's everything.
Mm-hmm.
As we said before, there's our list of runner-ups is on our website and in the show notes for this. Through you can look at it through the app or whatever. The app. The podcast the app.
The one.
The whatever one you have.
Yes.
You can look at it there. I have a lot of picture books. Truly, I really kind of wanted to talk about picture books, but I knew I wouldn't be able to pick one, and it's too many. So if you work with picture books professionally or are just interested or have kids, I guess, check out my runners-up picture books list.
Success! I believe that means 2021 is over. Thank goodness.
The year is over.
I don't know. I'm scared.
Yeah, I know, Megan.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube for some reason. Like, rate, subscribe, leave a review. That can be your New Year's present to us, rating us on Apple Podcasts.
Your New Year's present, the traditional gift-giving holiday of this time of year.
Yes. The traditional gift-giving holiday for podcasts, yes, is New Year's. The gift is a star. No, 5 stars.
Five of them, please.
Do not give us 1 star as a present, please. I beg you.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m, and find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book lists of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out. We can't make promises on reading your specific suggestion, but if you ask for a recommendation, we will give you one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
join us again on Tuesday, January 4th, when we'll be discussing the genre of architecture.
Then on Tuesday, January 18th, we'll be talking about how and why 2022 is the year of Book 2.
All right, here we go. Attempt number 2-ish.
Everyone's recording, right?
Only took us 16 minutes. Yeah, everyone is recording, right?
Gremlins.
That was a very large, loud vehicle behind me, so I'm going to say this a third time.
I wasn't trying to be quiet.
Call end.